From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 17th day of August, 2026. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets and what it's telling producers about next year's crop rotation. We'll do that with Bob Malzberger. He is with FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute, and an agricultural economist at the University of Missouri. Then we'll turn our attention to the agricultural news for the day, the closing of the Joslin Meatpacking Plant owned by Tyson Foods. We'll also hear from Sherman Newland today, who is on the western leg of the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. He's traveling through South Dakota and then later on through Nebraska this afternoon. We'll get an update of what those South Dakota corn yields look like. And as we close out our time together, Mark Russo will be here to tell us about the weather forecast for the growing regions across the planet, particularly what those crop scouts will run into in the Midwest this week and how things might be changing in Western Europe. And we'll do all of that right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn for the day settled at $4.65, up 6 cents. December, 6 1/4 higher at $4.89.5 in the March. $5.05 1/4 at finish, 6 1/4 higher. November beans, $12.16, up 23.5. January, 23 1/4 higher at $12.31 for the afternoon. The bean meal futures up $1.90. The bean oil futures up $2. And soft red winter wheat at $6.89 1/4. A quarter of a cent loss for the day, that in the December contract. The hard red December at 7.71 3/4, up 4 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the nearby contract at 218.77 1/2, a dollar lower, rather a dime lower. Feeder cattle were down $1.60 today at 3.32.95, and lean hogs at 81.72 1/2. 2.5 cents lower. Crude oil on the afternoon at $84.69 a barrel, up $2.30. Bob Malzberger, senior research economist at the University of Missouri and with FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute, now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hi, Bob. Thanks for being with us. Let's begin by getting a little bit of information about yourself first, please.
So I've been at FAPRI about 4.5 years now. Before that, I worked with IHS Global Insight, which is now part of S&P Global, for about 11.5 years as a economist. And at that time, I focused more on global oilseed markets, but I did baseline and price forecasting similar to what we do here at FAPRI. And during that time, I was working my graduate degrees with Abner for my master's, and then he retired, and then Pat Westhoff, which was the just retired, but the previous director of FAPRI. And most of my focus has been on, you know, this structural modeling of agriculture markets. And when I switched over to FAPRI, I focused on cost production, and I took over the U.S. crops model and then the state supply subside model as well, and do some U.S. farm income. So my focus is primarily on crops and the effects thereof on the markets and the different farmer behavior associated with those price effects and input effects.
Let's talk about that just a little bit as we look forward in this case into 2027. I suspect you've been thinking about the high price of N or nitrogen for corn producers, not only this fall, but into next spring, and the crop that they rotate most often with, soybeans, which fixes its own nitrogen, as well as the market ratio. Looking into 2027, what do all those things tell you?
Well, it tells me a lot of things when it comes to what's probably going to happen, given the prices today for spring planting in the United States. So there's a lot of things going on. As you mentioned, first was the fertilizer prices. The fertilizer prices accelerated when the U.S. and Iran conflict began. The nitrogen came down, at least wholesale, for a little bit, and it's a little bit off its peak earlier this year, but they still remain relatively high, below the 2022 peaks, but still relatively high. At the same time, in 2022, we had really high prices for crops, and those have come off. And even though they've come up a little bit, kind of spiked in May and again in June, but they are higher than they were last year for the marketing year. But they're still well below the peaks. And what that does is it puts a squeeze on making sure you stay in the black as a crop farmer. And when farmers are looking at what they're going to plant next year, it's a combination of what's your normal rotation. Normally, corn goes with soybeans and they rotate back and forth. Sometimes, you know, you include some winter wheat, double crop soybeans. But ultimately, the grains, wheat and corn, do take more fertilizer input, specifically nitrogen, whereas soybeans are nitrogen fixing. So if your normal rotation is corn, soybeans, it makes sense to stay on your rotation because that's what's going to be most productive for your soil. But sometimes across the Corn Belt, we see that certain states, they can grow corn back to back with corn, sometimes three times, but it requires even more fertilizer to keep those yields up. And so with high nitrogen prices, it seems to me that just on the cost of production front, that it makes sense that we may see people pulling those soybeans back into rotation, especially if they've been back to back corn, and then staying on rotation if they're corn soybean normally. So on the price side, looking at the futures market today, we see that soybean corn price ratio is about just under 2.5 this morning on the board. And that's kind of the reduced form profitability of what makes sense to plant. And if you get over that 2.4, closer to the 2.5, it basically, the market's trying to tell us that we should grow more soybeans. At the same time, I'm looking forward into the fall. We're in El Nino. Potentially, some of the meteorologists are talking about super El Nino. And what that means is for part of South America, there's going to be some dryness in some of those soybean areas, which means if they don't get that rainy season coming in early, which is typically around late September into October, it may mean that some of those soybeans don't go in the ground as quick. And if that's the case, it may affect their yields. And so that likely would keep that soybean corn price ratio kind of in alignment of what we're looking at today, which also keeps that incentive for the U.S. farmers to push more soybeans to the ground, especially if it fits the rotational needs.
So if I'm a producer and I'm in a corn-corn-soybean rotation, or I have acres that I can and am willing to move to soybeans for the coming year, because the marketplace is telling me to do that, you're giving me information that I feel that I really need to understand more fully, which is that's a price ratio today, which probably tells me I may need to market that, or at least a good portion of that soybean crop for 2027 today, if I can in some way. You're also telling me that it's likely that because of the super El Nino, there may be higher prices down the road. So I need some more information about how to make that decision.
Yes, you bring up two good, very good points. The marketing part of it, obviously hindsight's always 20/20. In May, we had a bean price over $12. In June, we are up near that again. And today on the board, I think we're looking at $12.09 for November soybeans this year. And so looking at next year, those prices are obviously still large relative to what they were a year ago for soybeans. On the board, we're looking at $11.83 for next November, November 27. And would it make sense if you are thinking about marketing your soybeans, it would be a good idea to take advantage of locking in a little bit of that, kind of feathering it in before the harvest lows, which we may have already seen in July. I'm not sure, but a lot of times that happens between late August and October. So with the price where it is today, it makes sense to try to feather in some of those early sales and think about at least part of your production maybe pushing back into the soybeans, like you mentioned. So if it makes sense for your farm and you're looking at your margins, taking a look at what is on available right now for prices, if you're looking at anhydrous for this fall application, it may seem a little daunting with the prices. Now, I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what's going to happen with the U.S.-Iran conflict and the war going on there. But we did see earlier this year when there was a little bit of the MOU and there was some potential peace talks going on, that's when we saw that FOB price for urea down at New Orleans come off. And some of that was reflected in what's happening right now with retail prices, and it's eased up a little bit. but it's still pretty high. And if you're looking at trying to lock in or not lock in, I don't know if we're going to have any kind of peace deal in between now and the spring. But if it does happen, those nitrogen prices may ease up a little bit. But looking at what's happening right now and where the prices are, it may make sense to really think about if you want to put a few more acres of soybeans in, and kind of if you got that corn, soybeans, maybe thinking about how many of those acres make sense to try to go back to soybeans for the spring planting.
Bob, thank you much. I really appreciate you taking time with me.
Absolutely, sir.
Bob Malzberger is a senior research economist at the University of Missouri and with FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. Here's some agricultural news for the afternoon. Tyson Foods is closing its Joslyn, Illinois plant that's near the Quad Cities. That's because of tight cattle supplies and a restructuring of the packing industry. Oklahoma State livestock marketing specialist Daryl Peel looked into this and says Tyson is concentrating its operations on its largest plants, but the adjustments may not be over.
They also indicated in today's news that in addition to closing Joslyn, that Pasco, Washington plant that they have was for sale. And so they're clearly looking to potentially do something with that plant as well at some point in the future.
Could more be on the chopping block? Peel says the industry still has more capacity than the current cattle supply can support in the United States.
I don't think probably, particularly with Tyson's indication that they may restart the second shift in Amarillo, that the total capacity wouldn't change that much. And therefore, we probably still have excess capacity for the foreseeable future. That'll continue to be a challenge for packers, and that may be the basis for some additional adjustments going forward.
Those packing plant changes do not just affect the companies and their employees. About 2,500 workers are losing their jobs in Joslyn, Illinois. And producers who have relied on Joslyn will have to find another destination for their cattle, and that'll probably involve higher transportation costs. Now let's turn to Washington, D.C., where Senate Ag Committee Republicans' remaining hope to advance a farm bill is the expected return of Kentucky's Mitch McConnell from a lengthy medical absence. Chair John Bozeman knew at the outset that he did not have the votes to advance his Senate farm bill, but now he's telling the Democrats he soon will. McConnell is home from rehab after a fall in June left him hospitalized. His progress could return him to the Senate next month. McConnell voted by proxy on farm bill amendments, but under Senate rules could not cast the winning final committee vote. Bozeman, meanwhile, told Democrats he would not negotiate further on his compromise one-year SNAP penalty delay.
I want to be clear, a two-year delay does not have the support of the majority in Congress or of the White House. The offer before you is the best, and it's the final offer.
Bozeman added the Democrats' rejection of the offer and the committee farm bill meant last year's SNAP changes will take effect.
Current law will remain in effect, and states with poorly administered SNAP programs will begin to pay for the portion of the benefit cost next year.
It's the third year without a new farm bill as losses and bankruptcies mount, and for Bozeman, it seems like the end of his patience.
We've worked very hard to provide a one-year extension. In return, we've gotten is 2 years or nothing.
I was chairman of the Senate Ag Committee, John Bozeman, and a look at today's agricultural news. You know, over 100 Crop Scouts have already hit the road for the annual Corn Belt Crop Tour this week, with its roots deep into the 1980s with the Illinois Farm Bureau's AgriVisor team and now operated by Pro Farmer. The tour is made up of two legs, one here in the eastern Corn Belt and one in the west. Sherman Newland of Zahner Ag Hedge has been traveling that western leg over the last several years and has returned this year with Karen Braun, who's also a Zahner Ag Hedge, and later in the week, Ted Seifried as well. Hi, Sherman. Thanks for being with us. I know you're supposed to be in Nebraska today, but I believe you start out in South Dakota. Where are you?
We We're doing part of both. I mean, we're doing our first nine stops. You're going to be in South Dakota. Then we'll have four or five more stops in Nebraska before we head on in, deadhead on into Grand Island in this evening.
What are conditions like on the ground?
Coming first stop right out of South Dakota was fairly moist. Wasn't too bad, but the farther west and east we've driven, it's gotten significantly drier. And you can tell by the corn is, you know, a lot, you know, going through drought. You can tell it.
And do you have some numbers for us today?
You betcha. You betcha. On average, because we've driven this route for the last, I don't know, 6-8 years anyway, at least Karen and I have. So on whole, we're down 11% on corn from last year, and down 14% on bean pod counts from last year. We've had ranges from yields. Our very first stop, again, was probably our best. We were like 205. And then the last several corn stops we've had have been close to 135. A lot of dry corn, been through a drought, poor pollination on those fields, ugly looking ears. Just the farther west and east we come, it would be that, you know, just finding a lot more. And I think this part, you know, of South Dakota's in that drought, you know, on the drought monitor map is definitely showing, and it's holding true. It definitely is.
Did you start in better corn than I take it further to the east? That would make sense to me.
Yes. Yeah. Just straight out of Sioux Falls. Yes, it was a lot better corn right there. Like I said, our first stop had good moisture, nicer looking ears, you know, a 205 yield, you know, and then our next one was like 175. Then our next one dropped down to 135, you know, and then we kind of ran into a little bit better corn. But then again, the last three stops, we've been in the low 130s. So, we've been in Lincoln County, Turner County, Hutchinson, Bonhom, and now we're getting ready to head into Yankton.
All right, and so you'll be in Yankton, and then you'll head into Nebraska, I take it, later today, too?
Yes, yeah, we'll stop, have some lunch, and we'll get into Nebraska, like I said, and then make four more stops. And then, like, it's about a 2 or 3 hour drive on in into Grand Island.
Okay, well, we will check in with you tomorrow, and thank you much for the update.
You bet.
Sherman Newland is with Zahner Ag Hedge and joined us from the western leg of the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. Mark Russo from Everstream Analytics now takes a look at the weather with us. Hi, Mark. I appreciate you taking some time. We have a lot of ground to cover, kind of like the Crop Scouts have this week across the Pro Farmer Crop Tour. They will be traveling through Ohio and the eastern side of Indiana today. And I'm going to guess that a lot of that will be very, very difficult moving. Can you tell me about the rainfall that we have had, particularly in that area, and what you think conditions might be like on the ground?
Yeah, well, we saw over the weekend, especially at the start of the weekend, anywhere from, you know, 1 to 5 inches of rain, localized higher amounts across those areas. And that was after, you know, what fell last week and, you know, so far in August, which has been, you know, obviously a very wet start or first half or so of August across a region. So that's the bad news here for those areas, is that they're going into some of the muddiest and wettest conditions that you could see at this time of year across those areas. The one good piece of news is the forecast.
Which is?
Well, looking ahead here, the pattern and that produced here the not only the heavy rainfall and flooding, but severe weather, that's beginning to come to an end. And while the pattern is not going to be totally dry, these upcoming events here, rain events, are going to occur less frequent and will be generally lighter here coming up. So that is the good news, is that this really wet start to August and all the severe weather and wind issues, besides the flooding issues in localized areas, that is now beginning to ease and change for this middle to end of the month.
I have not heard this, but just to put this one to rest, this is not a 1993 kind of event.
That is correct, yeah. 1993, the flooding started much earlier and continued here. This is, you know, certainly not to those levels here. And on top of that, too, we've gotten some inquiries about how do all the wind issues compare to August of 2020. And again, a totally different situation there. This is the 2020 was really, really bad, especially around Iowa. This year, you've not had that extent of severe wind gusts.
That would have been the derecho of 2020 through Iowa that lasted for 12 to 14 hours, maybe a bit longer than that, if I remember correctly. Now, given that, where is the heaviest rainfall? Where has it been? And then, because we have sunshine, I'm really trying to get at, you know, all of these places will benefit as it relates to grain fill and the rainfall together, I think. And so where were the hardest hit areas? Is there a line that you can give me from, I don't know, Rock Island Moline through Muncie, Indiana, or something along those lines?
Yeah, generally, just from like an interstate standpoint, you know, in around the I-80 down through I-70 corridor, kind of the hardest hit areas here in general, and again, rainfall totals over the past week or so, anywhere from, you know, 3, 4, 5 inches upwards to some 9, 10, and 11 inch total. So especially from, again, southeast Iowa, western Illinois, eastward through, you know, Columbus, Ohio in general.
Okay, now look ahead to the next week. What do you see?
Yeah, again, we see much less rain here coming up. Totals generally less than an inch across most of these areas that got, you know, the numerous inches of rain here over the past week's time frame. And so they'll be still some isolated areas that could pick up around an inch, but the vast majority of acreage will receive less than that. Not only the next 7 days, but even next week as well. This pattern of lighter and less frequent rains looks to continue next week.
Changes here. Do we have a cool down in Europe?
Yes. We're seeing a cool down in temperatures, especially across Western and Central Europe here coming up over the next couple of weeks. And along with that will be much improved rainfall prospects. In fact, the pattern across Europe over the next 2 weeks, it looks to be the wettest since basically May. And it's coming too late to improve summer crops, but we'll begin the process of improving topsoil moisture for upcoming winter crop planting, as well as improving the river levels, which, again, they're at these historically low levels here and causing, you know, major restrictions and issues with river transportation there.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. He is with Everstream Analytics. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.